Okay, hello and welcome to a very special episode of the No Nay Never podcast. I'm Dave Roberts, and before I introduce our very special guest, I'd also like to welcome along George Poole, who'll be joining me in today's proceedings. Hi, George, how are you?
Hi, Dave. How are you doing? I'm doing very well, thanks. I'm buzzing to be here with Barry, you know, a Burnley legend. Oh, have I just spoiled our special guest?
Well, today's special guest probably doesn't need too much of an introduction to Burnley fans, but suffice to say that as Burnley's chairman from the end of 1998, right through until May 2012, and then continuing as a director and also vice chairman until the end of last year, he played a pivotal role in the club's history, certainly recent history. So I'd like to welcome along Barry Kilby to the No Nay Never podcast. Hi, Barry.
Hi, everybody. Nice to be here and talking to you.
It's great to have you along. Great you've agreed to speak to us and hopefully impart some wisdom to our listeners.
Okay, well, I'm a little apprehensive, but let's see how we go.
I'm sure it'll be fine. Just want to start off, really, going way back, if we may. Living between Burnley and Blackburn, you grew up with the Burnley supporting father. Was there ever a chance that you might have ended up supporting a team in blue and white instead of the Clarets? I'm right in thinking that perhaps the fact your father became a Burnley fan was more by chance than anything else.
Well, there is the story that he told me. Back in about 1934, my dad pestered my granddad to take him to a football match. And he said, right, we're going next Saturday. So they lived in Clayton-le Moresby, by the way, which is obviously halfway between Blackburn and halfway between Burnley. And he said, right, we're going next Saturday. And it just so happened that Burnley were at home that Saturday. And so they got on the bus and went and watched Burnley. And my dad was there forever. I have often wondered if it had been the week before or the week after, what would have happened there. But thank the Almighty, it was Burnley, and then my dad was hooked, and Burnley's been in the family ever since.
Yeah, let's not contemplate that. I think Burnley fans are very happy the way it did pan out in the end, although these things can be down to luck, can't they? Can you actually remember the first Burnley match your dad took you to? I mean, obviously, you were going from quite a young age, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Oh, that's a real one. I can't give you some exact. I was going roughly, I'd say, about 1958. 59. Right. I do remember the championship season, and I went to some with my dad there. I'm sorry I can't give you a specific. I very much remember when they went to Manchester City and won the title, that I couldn't go to Main Road to the game, but they were coming back on the coach afterwards to the club and being sure. There waiting for my dad to come back. So I can't give you an absolute exact one as I think about it, but it was roughly then when I was about 9 years old, something like that, that I started going and sitting with my dad in what's now the Bob Lloyd Stand. I think they called it Bob Lloyd Stand perhaps then, but no, I don't think they did, but sitting in the stand with my dad.
And he had a season ticket back then, did he?
He had a season ticket back then, yeah. He was an absolute Burnley fanatic. All sorts of, I can remember just 2 years or so after that, me and my dad getting ejected from Aston Villa's ground. It was the Hampton pit disaster. And yeah. What happened was, we played Aston Villa. I was going then with my dad to all the coach game. I think it was about 62 this, to the Burnley games by a coach. And they had a minute silence for the miners that had died in the Hampton pit disaster. And halfway through that, this Aston Villa fan about five rows down from us started shouting. And there was an advert then, you lads are too young to remember it. There was an advert then called Mackison on telly where somebody shouted Mackison, all these bottles started shaking. And this guy shouted right in the middle of the minute silence, Mackison, and my dad went berserk. And he ran down and they started scrapping. Long story short, me and my dad got ejected from the ground. I was there with my school cap on. And we spent the whole match walking around Aston Villa's ground, listening to the crowd and everything like that. So I was quite young when I got ejected from a football ground with my dad. But he was a real big. He went to all the European matches and.
And he took you to the 1962 FA Cup final as well, didn't he?
Yes, I went to the 62 Cup final with him. Remember well, Burnley equalising before we'd sat down. Tottenham got put the second one in. I think it was Smith or somebody like that who scored. Yeah, I was there at the 62 final with him. So it was he was a real Burnley fan. And, you know, right through, he went to the games with Naples and all that type of thing. He sold tickets for the lottery and all that. He was a true, true claret, my dad.
There weren't too many Burnley fans who went to that game, I don't think. The one at Naples, were there?
Yeah, and another one there, of course. I don't know whether he told me this, that there was a riot at the end. And he told me the police came and protected the small number of Burnley fans. And he told me the police put them in the prison in Naples to protect them from the other fans. But I'm never quite sure whether actually my dad was put in jail, Martin, directly. But his story was that they were there for protection. So, yeah, he went to Naples. And, you know, then the 67, Nick, around that time, I remember him going there and everything like that. I've got photographs everywhere for all that type of thing.
Fantastic, fantastic. And just going on a bit, little bit from that, obviously you were brought up a Burnley fan and through your father and had watched plenty of matches, but then you got an opportunity to play for the club. Can you tell us a little bit more about
how that came about? I went to Clitheroe Grammar School. And what happened was I played in all the teams at Clitheroe. I captained Lancashire Schoolboys. And I was ready to go to Hull University at my last year at Clitheroe. And what happened was Clitheroe Football Club came and said, well, before you go, will you play some games? So I played some games for Clitheroe Football Club. I think it was the Lancs combination, one of those. And then Burnley came in and said, "Oh, we want to sign you up and play you in the junior teams, the A team and that sort of thing." And it was too big a temptation. So I didn't go to Hull University. So I went to play for Burnley. My usual tagline for this one is now, I signed alongside with Martin Dobson. And he went on to play for England, and I went on to play for Padiham. So, you know, that's what happened. They let me go after a year. So then for a year, I worked in the Burnley Lottery office for a year as well. But there was always that connection there with Burnley Football Club.
Good evening, Barry. It's a pleasure to speak to you. George here. I just wanted to dwell a little bit on the Clitheroe Grammar connection. I actually met you a few years ago at the sixth form while I was head boy there. And I remember seeing a plaque on the wall, actually, I'm pretty sure, which was indicating you were the first team captain back in the day. I just wanted to know, what was your experience of going to Clitheroe Grammar and how did it, you know, set you up for the very successful years to come?
Well, obviously, I was a Clitheroe Grammar School boy. Then you passed your 11 plus to go, etc. And the teachers were great, you know, bringing me through, then playing for Lancashire, etc., etc. It was a great school, I think, and really good on the sport, etc. And I owe them quite a lot.
And Barry, going forward, you mentioned about the time at Burnley and spent about 12 months there. Interestingly, one other player who was involved, you mentioned Martin Dobson, but it was also around about the time that Stan Turner was there. Do you recall him being a player at the club when you were there, or had he gone by then?
I can't honestly. I think I do, yeah, vaguely. Yeah, that Stan was playing then for Burnley in those years. I mean, we're talking here like 68. 67-68 season.
Yeah, I think he went to Carlisle the season after, didn't he?
I think he did. I'm not 100% on it, but I think he did, yeah.
And of course, didn't cross, or if he did, they weren't too memorable.
No. He was one of them icons of the first team, so, you know, I was just down there with the plebs.
although you're clearly a claret, having supported the club since you were a boy, how much of a shock to the system was it in later life when you became club chairman? Because it was a little bit of a whirlwind, wasn't it, that that time, late 1998, things that had gone on with the club earlier in the year. You came in as a director, and then it's a kind of...
The club were really struggling under the board of directors with Frank Teasdale, etc. The bank were threatening to foreclose. They had a $3 million debt. They'd fallen out with Stan Ternan, who mentioned that he wasn't going to play some players or something like that. And there was a big standoff there. And they were trying to get somebody to, come in. And it just worked brilliant for me because my first business, I sold to a company called G-Tech, and it just coincided with that. So I was able to come in and, take over the club, settle the debt, and then I did a share issue. So I didn't want it to get into too much debt and took it on from there. So it did coincide when I did get plenty of some cash coming into me, and it was just at the right time that I came in.
And it was one of those things that year. I remember there was a guy called Peter Shackleton who was involved from a consortium. He was kind of heading that. And then there was Ray Ingleby, of course. So how did that kind of pan out? How did that settle itself, really?
Well, I don't know how Shackleton, Mr. Shackleton, was, I'm not sure he had the resources. And Ray was there, but he was only half there. So when I took over, I brought him in as vice chairman then, because then he did have a couple of million to put into the pot. So he became my vice chairman when I took over as chairman.
And he was happy to play second fiddle to you, was he?
Well, he didn't quite have enough money, and it wasn't quite as high up on his... I was passionate. Ray, it was like he was looking to buy a club, and get into a club. But I persuaded him to come, say, come on, come with us, and you can be my vice chairman. And that's how it worked.
Because I think he was from St. Anne's originally. He'd been over in America and worked over there.
He'd been over America. That's where he made quite a bit of money. Came back. But yeah, he was a person from St. Anne's. Not particularly football. He just fancied having a club type of thing, Ray. But don't get me wrong, he was a very good number two for me, was Ray. And he had some things like he was the one that brought Ian Wright to the club a little bit down the line. It was his contacts that did it. Some things like that he was excellent at.
So I guess in terms of that, you were the spearhead, you were the chairman for a long time, but it was a team effort. There was a group of directors,
yes,
Clive Holt, who'd been in the club a long time.
I tried to get people to invest. I did the share issue, and then I built the directors. I had about 8 new directors, John Turkington, come on, Barry. There were about 8 of us at the end of the day. They could all divvy up, half a million, something like that, to into the club's coffers to get us out of debt and start us being able to try and build a team. So that went very well, actually, over there. But they were all, I think they were all Burnley people who had, who did identify with the club, and local businessmen, very basically. So,
and it wasn't all plain sailing at the start. You had a tough start in there, and you stuck with Stan. We had some tricky results, didn't we, that first season? And
yes, we did. The worst one was like the I got on well with Stan, and came back in, but just after Christmas. Maybe just slightly later, we lost at home like something like 5-0 to Gillingham, and a similar score to Manchester City.
6 to Manchester City, yeah.
Was it? You know all these things, and I'm trying to remember them. And it was really, oof, what do we do? Do we get stand? Anyway, I said, no, come on, let's go for it. I think we brought Graham...
Graham Branch came in, didn't he? Yeah.
Graham Branch.
Yeah,
and we managed from that absolute disaster to cut it back and save the season.
And I remember that season. You mentioned those two games. There was the 5-0 defeat and the 6-0 defeat. We then lost 1-0. I don't know why we had 3 home games in a row. We did. We lost 1-0 to Preston. That was a televised game.
Yes,
and then we had a an away draw. And then the pivotal game was a 4-3 win. We came from behind to beat Macclesfield 4-3 and then went on a fantastic right. run to the end of the season.
Yeah, that was there at Macclesfield. I remember that. And yeah, you ended up really being safe. And then, of course, we built up to the next season, getting that promotion.
Yeah, and what a fantastic season it was, of course, 99-2000, getting Burnley back to the, well, the second tier as it was then, but getting into the championship before it was called that, it was a fantastic achievement with, as you say, Ian Wright, the final piece in the jigsaw that helped
getting
us over the
Ian
line.
Ian Wright back and that famous game at Scunthorpe when we got the win, and I can't think who it would be, the other team that had to lose. Was it Gillingham or one of them? I can't just remember the team.
Yeah, Wrexham beat them, didn't they?
Wrexham beat them. Yeah. So we're all there and we went up and everybody went mad. I went back in the coach with Stan and Ian Wright and we were out on Burnley that night. We had a great night. So it was fabulous that time, and we're back into the second tier of English football.
You mentioned then, Barry, the pressure on yourselves and Stan when, you know, results weren't going your way. I mean, it was a little before my time, but I remember I have vivid memories of my dad talking about that Gillingham game and how bad things looked at the time. Was there any, when you sort of broached the idea to your family about taking over as chairman in 1998, was there any trepidation on behalf of within your family about the possibility of taking over a club that obviously you've loved since you were a boy? I remember Bob Lord used to, I've heard down the line, obviously, that Bob Lord felt he had the weight of the whole town on his shoulders as while he was chairman. So was there any trepidation from yourself or your family before taking over? Well, or was it such a whirlwind that you didn't really have time to consider?
I think so. You know, Sonia, my wife's the boss, but on this one, I'm sorry, you know, this was it. It was a fabulous opportunity and I was going to do it and go for it. And if I lost my money, I lost my money. You know, once it took a hold and everything, that was it. And you know, it was brilliant just to pick it up and go.
It's safe to say it turned out well in the end.
It did. You know, to get that promotion just after. And then, you know, we had to scrap it out then for nearly a decade. But we stayed in that championship.
We had our challenges in that time as well, Barry, didn't we, with the ITV Digital?
ITV Digital was a real blow to us. You know, I often got people used to laugh a bit at me on it, but I used to have them saying that I'll never bet the ranch. Yeah, and that's how I've always run Burnley. And it was like, ITV weren't going to go bust, were we? So the money was guaranteed. So we spent up to that money. My God, they went into administration and we were left with a big hole, certainly a few million in the thing. And that was an absolute shock what happened with that one. And we were really scrambling, you know, to get back even and doing all that. That was a real shock, that one, because nobody dreamt that ITV, an ITV company, would go into administration. So even though we've been... we'd done it like we thought, within all capabilities, and that's what that happened.
Yeah. And it was one of those things as well where presumably that had a knock-on effect for probably three or four seasons, didn't it?
It wasn't just a case of
it's a sudden shock. You've then got to adjust to it
where we thought we'd be sitting on like a few million quid, which in them days and in that division was good, that we didn't. We had to be a lot more careful. And, you know, fortunately, Stan went. But got Steve Cotterill and then, but we came round and we were there and, you know, we got back and, it was, you know, then you know what happened further down the line.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned about manager recruitment. Obviously when you first came in, Stan Turnt was already manager. So you kind of inherited him. There then came a decision later on. You took the decision, I think, to let Stan go. He's come to the end of his contract, 2003-04, and then big decision not to renew it.
Just thought we're losing it. What was it, 2004?
Yeah, 2004, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'm afraid I had the horrible thing. I met him in my office on my own, and he came through next season. I just had to say, Stan, I'm sorry, but it's time we parted. I thought, well, heck, what's he going to do? But he was, thank you, Chairman. Closed his thing and walked out. But he was a good manager in his time. He was a good manager, but it needed the change. You do need that. You know, we were drifting. So that decision was made to get a new manager.
And looking back at the decision to take the ownership of Turf Moor out of the club, because that was another, well, I guess a necessity from your point of view, from the finances.
Again, you're raising cash, you know, you take it out, but then rent it back, and the money you've got there you use for the club. So there's all these things we have to do from Burnley. We haven't got I'm perhaps jumping too far ahead, but we haven't got an Arab, you know, paying bloody £1 billion or something for it. And you know, and it's good though, it was local people that owned it. You know, local businessmen, yes, they had a bob or two, but nothing like something what we're competing with. So, you know, we had to do certain things like that to keep the right side and being able to invest in the team still, etc., etc.
Yeah, we were talking about financial difficulties earlier for clubs. And I was actually, when I was doing a bit of research the other day for this interview, I came across an interview that you did with Clarets Mad in 2003. And you voiced, it's a long way back, but you voiced your opposition to the Football League imposing penalties for clubs that go into administration. Now, obviously, that's really topical at the moment, again, with the likes of Derby and lots of other local clubs to us going into administration. Has your sort of view on that changed? And is it the only way really to stop bad ownership of clubs is to dock points?
I think maybe I have just changed a little bit now through how football's gone and some of the cynical administrations that I've seen. You know, a genuine administration, it can be something like, not particularly, maybe is bad, but not absolutely thought of. Hey, we'll drop our debts, lads, and you know, we'll carry on, and you know, and then we can come back and spend a bit more money and improve. We'll dump our debts. It's that is very cynical, and perhaps that does mean we should there should be points as well, that they can't just dump the debts and get new owner in, and then they carry on from where they are. Perhaps that has changed, in my opinion, because of the cynical way that it's been used.
And it's interesting to compare it, jumping ahead before we go back to your time at Burnley. When we look at the Super League that was obviously proposed last year, and you look at that now and you think, to my eyes, them six clubs in the Premier League just got off scot-free. And there was no accountability for the Super League clubs, was there at all? When you compare it to the likes of Wigan and Derby, who are going into administration, getting, you know, docked heavily, and then you've got these six clubs that are just getting away scot free,
and just leaving and going on to, you know, we have a lot of foreign owners now that perhaps don't identify in those sort of terms that other, you know, down the way, some of the directors do that, you know, to them, it's just could be somebody else they own, not just them.
And there are big differences in terms of the owners. Times have changed now. I mean, the sort of money you had to buy Burnley weren't a Championship club. We were a third tier club at that time. You couldn't dream of doing that these days with the way that football finance have gone, could you?
No, absolutely not. So there has been these big changes, and we're still scrapping away, you know, trying to come up against these absolute mega, you know, this one at Newcastle at the moment. I mean, they're just going to pump bloody millions upon millions in, aren't they? And you think, oof, you know, it's going to become absolutely the top of the Premier. It's going to become absolutely just a club in itself, I think, and very hard for anybody to even get anywhere near that. Now, we're scrapping away now to stay in that league and hopefully keep where we are, maybe sometimes upsetting their apple cart.
do you think that the new takeover of Newcastle, will that create a lot of additional pressure on clubs like us towards the bottom of the league, not just in that Newcastle themselves will improve, but the whole knock-on effects of transfer fees, contracts, wages, will that create a lot of pressure on clubs like us?
They will obviously go through the roof, won't they? They'll be signing massive contracts and that we can't even think of, but not that we really were in some of their leagues then. Our players' wage bill at the moment's about 80 million. I think there's one or two single players in their companies that will get that. So we're always going to have to be, got to run it properly and work within those sort of constraints, where some of these with the massive, Arabs behind them and loans and everything, they're just through the roof in a different planet than we are.
Yeah, I mean, we are jumping ahead slightly from what we want to go through, but it's relevant at this point, I think, in terms of how did it feel to be in the company of these types of people? Because presumably you're at boardrooms, you've been in boardrooms at away grounds, and they've been into the boardroom at Burnley when these other owners come along. I mean, some of them don't bother. They don't bother going to the games, but quite a few of them do.
Some of them do. Not that many, actually. You know, if you're owned by a Saudi Arabian, I keep saying Saudi Arabia, but you know what I mean? They don't really come to that many games. Manchester City, the owner there, you don't really see him. His chief executive will be there, and Mike Summerby and some of these sort of people. But the actual owners don't go that often to a game. Some do. I know, the Leicester guys did, didn't he? The guys that sadly died. I did see him a lot. But quite a lot of these, I think they're just there for the status, and they can watch it on the telly in their own country and say, that's my club. But actually going, on a November Saturday to watch play Burnley, I don't think that's that high up on their list.
Especially if they lose.
Especially if they lose.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see that balance, because obviously you've come through at the level you did, and you've invested a lot of money in Burnley Football Club. But as we said, it's kind of small fry to what an individual would have to do now to buy a football club. It has just changed so much.
Yes, it really is. And like some people have lost massive money. I always look down now and see Sunderland down there. Gates are 30,000, mm-hmm. and yet they're still in the third tier of English football.
Sheffield Wednesday as well.
Sheffield Wednesday, Portsmouth, some big, what I call big clubs there. Now, all three of them are foreign-owned, actually, I think. Certainly Pompey are. But they're not people that's been like this Saudi. They haven't pumped billions in. They quite a lot start off thinking it's going to be easy and then go, whoa, and almost like, they'll keep the shares, but they ain't going to keep chucking money in. They've bought players and thinking it'd be easy, and it's not. It's definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, that tends to be the problem now in the Championship, doesn't it? I think Burnley did well to get out when we did. Now the sorts of money coming through, and this kind of comes on to the next point I had regarding the situation Burnley had. We got that fantastic promotion in 2008-09, playoff win at Wembley. But the finances before that, we've made quite a push, haven't we, to get to that point and to get to that position. There was quite a lot riding on that game, wasn't there?
There was. Don't get me wrong, we weren't betting the ranch, right? I'm coming back, we knew what we were doing. Sometimes you have to think the old football way is we have that player who's an asset, and if it doesn't work out, we are going to have to sell a player. That was very much, how it used to work in football. If you got, you had to sell, selling players was used so often to break even or cover losses or whatever. So, we were ready. We weren't going to the dogs or anything like that. But obviously it was a massive thing to win it, obviously.
And what were your memories of that day, Barry?
They were fabulous. That was one of the best days in my life. I've got a photograph here of being, Steve Caldwell and my wife were all hugging each other on the thing. It was a fantastic day. And to get there and, the way we beat Reading just beforehand, if you remember, that was a really good performance. But that was something else, wasn't it? To win on that day and just to sit back and think, we've made it. We have actually got back to the Premier League.
Fantastic.
After all those years, what, early 70s, I think?
76, yeah, 33 years we were away.
God, you're fabulous with your stats. 76, yeah. Yeah, something like that. And, you know, and what we'd gone through, and my God, you know, the famous Orient game as well in there, where I've been told that if we had lost that game, we'd have gone out of business. There wouldn't have been a Burnley Football Club. There was no, like, league, set fifth league, if you like, to come back and all that. And thank goodness the Almighty was looking over us that day.
Just as he was at Wembley. That was a magical day. I remember I was only, I was 8 years old that day.
Oh, my goodness.
We're in the top tier at Wembley, and I have two memories pretty much of the day. And it was just looking at the massive stadium for the first time being there. And then I remember after the game, just walking down the stairs, and I was just in floods of tears, but obviously tears, just tears of joy. And I think my dad was exactly the same, but he was trying to hold it together a bit. But what I was going to ask,
like I said, it had been all those years, and we'd nearly gone out of the league and perhaps out of existence. And, you know, we had got back. It was a brilliant day, like you say.
What was your first thought after the celebrations that night, or maybe the day after, maybe the day after that? What was your first thought in the football-wise? Was it, oh, gosh, how are we going to stay up? Or was it, let's just enjoy this year for what it is?
Well, I don't think I'd have been able to have done it the day after. I think we'd had a few beers by the time the following day came. I did an interview, if I remember, on Sky Telly or something. I thought, oh, God almighty. Like everything now, right, we've got to sit down with Mr. Coyle and say, right, is this new money coming in? Where are we? What players, etc., like that? We want to stay in this league. And you start building it up again.
Because there was some discussion around that time as well about whether he was going to go for Celtic. Straight after winning the playoff final, there was talk of Celtic coming in.
He did, on the day we won, have a phone call with Celtic. Now, did he tell us? Did somebody overhear it? I can't just remember on that, but he was speaking to Celtic. But we got him in. Me and Brendan Flood was with me that day. And said, oh, look, come on, this is a fabulous opportunity. You know, there's only two teams in Scotland. Come on, you can go out and play a Man U's and all these. So that's when, you know, we knew it was with us for half a season.
Yeah, welcome back to the second half of this very special No Nay Never podcast with our very special guest, Barry Kilby. And we've just got up to the Burnley's first Premier League season and the small matter of the Burnley manager leaving, going to Bolton Wanderers and taking virtually the whole backroom staff with him. What sort of a shock was that in the boardroom, Barry?
It was an absolute disaster. Knew nothing about it. We got to Christmas. We were down, you know, we were scrapping away down the bottom, but we're doing okay. And then I think we're in Switzerland or something. I got the thing that Owen wanted to speak to us. And then it got the famous thing that he'd been speaking to Bolton Wanderers. And he wanted to go. And the famous quote that he did, to a club 10 years ahead of Burnley Football Club. And, you know, it wasn't just that either. It was that he took the whole of the staff with him as well. And that was a real blow. I went and saw and said, come on, you can't do this. No, I'm sorry that, you know, it's something there, right? And then, you know, all the staff, come on, boys. And he took everybody with him. And we were left absolutely blooming well, you know, decimated by that. And I think we had a very decent chance of staying in the division if he had stayed. but he obviously saw this, what he called a bigger club. And that was that. And we lost them. And unfortunately, we got relegated at the end of the year.
And what sort of challenges were there in there in terms of trying to, obviously, we know that Brian Laws came in as manager, but obviously, as you mentioned, there's other staff having to come in as well. How did that pan out?
We did the best we can and promoted people, and then Brian brought some of his own people, but we couldn't hold on, and we were down again. And it was really disappointing, really was, you know, to happen just then, crucially, right in the middle of the season at Christmas time, and no inkling at all, and then bang. Anyway,
we played Bolton between Christmas and New Year, if I remember
right. Yeah, we did.
Whether anything was said there,
it was there, wasn't it? They beat us, but
1-0, I think, wasn't it?
A couple of players, didn't we? Lost a couple of players on that. It was really to wipe the coaching staff out as well was really something right in the middle of the season. Was really a horrible thing to happen.
Did that make the hiring process harder for a manager in that you'd have to bring in, you know, you'd have to bring in some guys with you rather than coming in?
We had to really start. Yeah, he did know some sort of people and everything like that, and you know, he did start. I can't just remember the names now. But we did start to build it up again. But it really was a terrible thing to happen in that second half. And, you know, it meant relegation. And it was, really was. But he obviously thought going to Bolton was a better move in his career.
And look who's smiling now.
Well, they are 10 years in front of us.
I hope not.
We're in time in 2030, haven't we?
Yeah, we better start preparing now.
As I said, we've got a worrying time in about 2030, in about 9 years' time.
Yeah, all right then, we'll have a think about that one. Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned about recruitment, we've mentioned about previous managers, you inherited Stan, you recruited, obviously you're involved in the process to recruit Steve Cotterill, and then obviously Owen Coyle himself coming in. And then, obviously, the Brian Laws one was kind of a really difficult situation in the middle of a season. How did you find the managerial process, the process to hire new managers?
We were interviewing people in January that were all out of work. And, you know, it was the middle of a season. And, we had to sort of try and get going. And Brian did come through very well. And I still wouldn't, you know, be too hard on him. But how it came about at the end of the day, I can't blame him for not staying in the league. At the end of that season, we were really scrambling around for everything, but that's what happened. And then obviously into the next season, and things didn't quite work out. He was certainly the best candidate we had, was Brian. And he'd done very well at Chef Wednesday. I don't know if you remember that. He'd done really well.
And Scunthorpe before that as well.
So we had all the credentials, but somehow we didn't just get together on that one.
As well as football, we wanted to highlight the work of the Barry Kilby Prostate Cancer Appeal. And I guess that story starts with your own diagnosis in 2011, I believe. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that led to you setting up the charity?
Yes. What happened was that it just in a general medical inspection that I got, I was lucky that they did just take a PSA test, and I didn't know what a PSA test was. And they came back and said, whoa, this is really serious. Look, you know, you've got, you know, the high thing, it was 80. I won't bore you with the technicalities, but, you know, you've got to do something now. But I only came across it by accident. And we, you know, luckily, in inverted commas, I was able to get real, get something done about it and treated. Whereas if it had gone a lot longer, I wouldn't have been here now. fabulous bit from David Sullivan at West Ham. He was good, putting me in all the right places and everything like that. So it came, but it came home to me that men don't know much. We're terrible going to doctors ourselves and asking to things, you know. And so it was really just a thought on that. Now, there had been a couple of tests at Burnley. Some of the lads at Burnley had one test, and that, you know, with a small things. They were saying, we need more PSA tests. But I thought, no, come on, we've got to go this in a big way. I phoned the Barry Kilby Prostate Cancer Appeal and went down that line of, yeah, we'll do it through football clubs. Men will go to a club with their mates and the publicity they can generate, where, you know, because it's something where you don't get the symptoms easily. All right, you might go in for a wee in the night more often than that, but it's often way down the line before you really know there's something wrong. But if you can get it tested early and get people will come out to the football game and get the publicity and go with their mates to the game, we can do it. So that's the line we've been going down now. And we've certainly saved, I would say, 400 lives, 500 lives. Mm-hmm. We have Burnley. We started again with Burnley 2 weeks ago. We had 400 people come down. And I've just got the results back, actually. We have what we call red and amber. Red, you're in real trouble. Amber, you're on the cusp. Green, okay, see you next time. And we got 30 of that in, which is about right, between red and green. And now we've got onto them, to the doctors going ahead. I've got Rochdale coming up. I have a big one, I have two big ones at Man City and Liverpool. And we raise funds to get this off. We've got to, you know, all our epidermis, all the thing now ready. And luckily, we're ready to get back on the road again after being COVID and shutting it down. But it's something I'm very passionate about because, you know, I have my life saved. And it is a killer. There are about 15,000 men die every year of prostate cancer. And like I say, it's not easy to pick up, but the PSA test could be the first indication. And we can do it. And we've saved all, you know, we're going to do it now through football.
It's the perfect way, isn't it, really? You know, everyone goes to the football every Saturday. And it's sort of, it becomes part of the ritual almost.
Burnley now, it was really great. As I said, we had that 400 to 500 people, men come up. I was there. My next one's Rochdale. I've done Burnley Golf Club as well in between, but you know, we've got them all tied up. Pompey, I've got Portsmouth coming up. So, you know, we're back on the road now, and it's a big thing. We have our own lottery that we do. We get donations. I don't know if you know, I've written a short story book. I don't know if you know about that one.
We've both got that, yeah.
Have you got that one? It's yes, a bit ratey, yeah. I'm afraid, but you know, just one of those things. And we sold about 20,000 of those at £2. That's 40 grand we've got in.
Very good.
So it's just something I'm very passionate about, as you can tell. And we are saving lives. And it's a big thing, prostate cancer, that's got left behind in a way, because you know there's no national thing like there is for breast cancer for women, etc. So this football route is we're going down, and as I say, with some real big ones now, Liverpool and Man City coming round, as well as like going to Rochdale and that type of thing.
Is there any plans to take it into any other sports, Barry, like cricket or the rugby?
I did one. It's not particularly big, but Bob Willis died of prostate cancer, and we did a testing in the summer. When they came, what was his county he played for? Worcester? No. Warwickshire against Lancashire. We did a test day then. That's the one we did at cricket, because it was with Bob Willis, and he did die of prostate cancer, and his wife was involved and all that type of thing. But at the moment, football is my you know, big one that we're doing it by, but certainly could do it via cricket as well.
Yeah, it's plenty
of raise money for everyone. I've got to pay my phlebotomists and all this type of stuff and do all that. So we have to raise the money, but things are going okay and we're ready to go again.
Yeah, and we encourage our listeners to go and donate if they can do to.
Yeah, there are things. It's usually men over 50 that it comes to. But actually, the Burnley one, I was surprised. There was a guy just over 40 that proved positive. That's unusual, but and there are various ethnic mixes as well that where it can happen more often than in other ones. But very basically, just get that test, and once we've got it, we can start to get it under control. Mine got out; it got to my pelvic bones and all this, but I've now been, like you say, I've been 10 years nearly OSS, still alive. And, let's keep going.
Yeah, and still doing some amazing work.
Barry, you stepped aside, didn't you? That kind of put your mind to step down as Burnley chairman. That was in 2012. You stayed on as a director, but you focused on the
I
charity.
I honestly thought that I might not be here, and then... like I say, the Almighty was looking down on me, and yes, I was. And then I came back as vice chairman under Mike. So that's where I've been up to what's just happened recently.
How did it feel when Burnley qualified for Europe? Obviously, you mentioned earlier on about your father going to the first cup games in 2007. How did it feel to be able to go and watch those games when Burnley?
It was absolutely brilliant. Obviously, we went to Athens and Istanbul, was it? I think, yeah.
And not forgetting Aberdeen.
With all the fans. Oh, and Aberdeen as well. I suppose that is a foreign country. And it was really, Yeah, to do that was fabulous. And I did think about my dad a lot. And for Burnley fans to go, and the ones I met there and everything, it was like, we have come back a long way, lads, And it was a fabulous time to qualify for Europe again.
Yeah, and it was quite a lot of nostalgia in the programmes, wasn't it? Looking back on the home programmes.
Kendall's games, that's, games. The 62. 62 one, I think, when we won the league. Was it 60, Barry?
60.
1960 when we won the league, and then we had 60-61 for the European
That's
Cup.
Right. That,
and then obviously the first cup was...
got pictures in the... I've got all photographs and everything, Jimmy Adamson shaking hands with the Reams guy, etc. It was something fabulous to get back and be playing in Europe again.
Maybe we'll enjoy that again sometime soon. Going forward, though, in terms of ownership, it's a logical move forward. Obviously, your time as a director came to an end at the end of last year when the club's ownership changed. How much of a wrench was that to kind of to let go of something that's been such a big part of your life for the last 20 years, more than 20 years?
It was a massive wrench. And I'm finding it now, much more than I thought it would be. It was like you say, after all those years and being part of the, the directors, et cetera, and having a say, influence on things that we've done for it to go through. I was offered to be a club ambassador by the ALK, but really, I didn't want to do it. So a couple of the other directors are now, they've got seats near the old director's box. But I said, no. So I've gone across the way. So I'm on the James Hargreaves stand and with my table there. And I'm really enjoying it with the fans. And I think that's how I'm going to have to do it now. But it is a bit of a wrench, particularly getting to away games, because I don't have any getting in there now. And I have to smile to myself. Going to City on Saturday, so I'm in with the pie chuckers, with two of my sons, so we'll be there sat behind the goals with the Burnley fans. That is a massive change now. So
I'm sure you'll get recognised.
Well, maybe, but that's that's there. But it is a massive thing after 20 odd years, obviously. And not having influence then that I did have.
How involved during the takeover process were you, Barry, in the talks themselves?
I was hardly involved at all. What happened was I did have an agreement with, I can't say who, another to sell my shares in 2000, when I became 75. I thought, well, I'll probably be not here, or you know, doolally or something. But in that agreement, there was what they call an anti-embarrassment clause, where if that person sold his shares before that, I was tagged along. So I was in a tag along on this one. So I had no negotiations with it. I did have one or two conversations, you know, and they had interesting things, new technology esports, is it called, women's football, which is great, that they want to push that. Now, whether they're going to be the revenue earners and things like that, I don't know. But I thought, you know, they have a decent chance. What I didn't know was that I rather innocently thought they were paying for it themselves, not putting it the impetus on the club, which worries me a lot.
I was going to touch on this, actually, and I listened to the interview you did with the Spitting Feathers podcast, and I, the one thing that jumped out to me was you spoke about the pride of the club at the time being debt-free and with a substantial amount of money in the bank, whereas when we talk now, the club does have a substantial amount of debt and with none of that original 80 million or whatever it was in the bank. Obviously, it doesn't sound as though, you know, you're best pleased about it. But are you worried about what that might mean for us going forward, or is it manageable?
I think we all have to worry as Burnley fans. They can come through, these lads, don't get me wrong. And they've got they seem extremely efficient, etc., etc. But what worries me slightly is if we got relegated, straight away we lose about 50 million quid. So we've got to somehow get our P&L together to accommodate that, and that's extremely worrying to me. But hopefully we can get out, and they will come through. They're very competent, and you know, like I said, the new technology thing, I can't come on to it, but they are a worry. There is a worry there.
And just going back, we mentioned about managers. Obviously Sean Dyche is still manager. He's been with us for coming up 9 years now. And you, again, it was kind of after you'd left as chairman, you're still a director. Were you involved particularly in his recruitment, that process? When
yes,
Sean
very
Dyche
much was... so. Very much so. I was, in fact, it was very soon after I'd left. They had some interviews at my house, I think he came, and everything like that. And, he came over extremely well. So I was part of the committee that appointed Sean. And boy, what an appointment that's worked out to be.
Definitely.
And, I've got a great relationship with Sean. He lives up here in Worley during the week, because his family is still down in the Midlands. So I live quite near to him. And so we sort of got him meeting up, and he's there with Ian Warne and everything. So we have our 10-point parties. So every 10 points, we're down there in Woolly Wine Boy, having a few, and then going off to have a meal every 10 points. And we've done that all the way through. And I'm very, he's been a fabulous manager for us. And, I'm delighted that he signed his contract, to carry on, because he's been a great manager for us. Maybe the greatest, if you want to think about what league he's in, etc., etc.
Certainly the greatest in my lifetime. And funnily enough, I live in Barrow, actually, so I sometimes see him in Worley. I shyly go like, "Hi, Gaffer, nice to see you."
Yeah, but, well, they are great. And, yeah, they're brilliant. Somehow, I'm just hoping now we can do as usual and pull the rabbit out of the hat and keep us in this division.
We spoke then about Sean's appointment just being, you know, as good as anyone could have wished for, probably better than anyone could have wished for back then. Is there a single decision that you think during your time with the club that was the best decision I made, or was it taking over in the first place?
Oh gosh,
I'm putting you on the spot here.
Well, no, taking over was something for me, but certainly in managerial terms, getting Sean together was there. But it wasn't just me; the other guys did come through for him. He did his record. He'd been at Watford half a season, I think. But somehow, the interview he did and everything, and that forceful passion that he's got, came through, and everybody just thought, you know, I think, you know, so and so, and. What a great thing it was for us. And I'm absolutely delighted. Like I say, he's signed an extension to his contract.
And look how many managers Watford have had since then.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got to beat them though now. I thought, you know, come on, lads, let's get some points. Yeah. But let's hope we can just pick this up. I'm expecting a win on Saturday against City anyway.
Well, we've lost the last 4-5-0, haven't we? So we need to...
I think we'd go for a 0-0 draw, wouldn't we?
We'd take that now, wouldn't we?
Okay, then. I agree with you.
I think one final thing I wanted to look at. I mean, obviously, we've mentioned quite a lot about the football side. We've mentioned about the charity. What else can people do to get involved? You've obviously got a... fundraising going on. You've got a lottery. There's other ways.
Please look at our website, you know, and get on all the infos on there. We really are. It really will save men's lives. If you get into the lottery, it just costs £2 a week, you know, and that goes towards paying, because we have to pay all the phlebotomists and do all that type of thing. But it you can win money. And then do a bit on that one. But really is something I want to really push. We've saw so many people coming around now. I mean, I've got Ipswich Town, I've got Pompey, I've got Plymouth. I've just told you, got Rochdale, them the two biggies we've got there. And, you know, it's all going to want funding, this. But I'll tell you what, everyone will save lives. Everyone. And also, it's something us men have to look. You lads look really fit in that. But get to that 50, get testing, lads, because it can come when you've no, you know, you've no inkling it is. And I was so lucky to get tested when I did.
Yeah, and we'll certainly be linking. We'll be linking
everything in our show notes.
And just one final question from me. We heard that you're going to Manchester City on Saturday, so I think maybe more fool you with the...
Do you know I've said that?
You did commit to it. But I just wondered, obviously, you grew up in Great Harwood, I believe, and going to Manchester City on Saturday, what with all the success that you achieved, what has kept you in the Northwest rather than heading for sunlit uplands elsewhere?
What's kept me in the Northwest with my businesses and everything? It just worked on. By the way, my office was in Blackburn. So, you know, I had to put up with all that. It's just one of those things. And it's connected because I told you I worked in the lottery office at Burnley for a year, and that got me into like the scratch cards and all that type of thing. But also my family was into it. My granddad was a bookie on Blackburn Dogs, of all things. But he also had a small printing place where he did that. And it just came through, and we got... The skills were there, and then I had a couple of Irish partners, etc. And then I got this big breakthrough through when things like the Sun newspaper, Times came. I invented a game called Portfolio, and then I went on to all sorts of games. And I didn't need to leave, you know. And the talent was all around here, because the Northwest is great for people who's got gaming skills and, you know, what a draw is, etc. So there's no way, even though my clients were all the big London newspapers and that type of thing. But then it went massive abroad, and there's no need to leave. And I do love it up here and my kids and everything. So really, and then there's always Burnley Football Club, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, that's there to be there every other Saturday to go and watch. I've got one son that's down in London. He tries to get up whenever he can, but the others are still around here as yet. And we, like I said, we're there with the pie chuckers on Saturday.
Yeah, and we certainly benefited from you staying in the Northwest. Before Dave wraps up, I just want to say thank you, really. Obviously, you took over the club 1998. I was born a couple of years later in 2000. And I think when we went to Athens in 2018 now, I remember at the end of the game, it must have been at least 20 minutes afterwards. But I think you were standing up in the director's box. And I'm certain it was almost every single of the 1,000 fans that were there were singing, "There's One Barry Kilby." And I think that moment just summed it up for me from 1998 to, you know, really torrid times all the way through to playing in Europe again under Sean. I mean, you can't wish for much more than that for a small mill town. So before Dave wraps up, I just want to say thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate that. Thank you.
No, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Barry, for your time today and for imparting your wisdom to our listeners. I'm sure there's lots of nuggets in there that they'll have enjoyed listening to. We certainly have.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. And I might see you on Saturday, yeah?
For a win.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. We said we'd take a nil draw, didn't we?
Thank you once again to Barry Kilby for agreeing to appear as our guest on this very special episode of the podcast. I'll be back again this Friday with Natalie Bromley to preview that match against Manchester City. So do join us again then. I've been Dave Roberts, and this has been the No Nay Never podcast. Until next time.